Hey, hey, it's the Pretty Corrupt Podcast, your inside guide to celebrity scandals and the reality of reality TV. I'm Jordan Ross Myers, the man behind Twitter's notorious Don Gundelson and Lee Radswell, along with my co-hosts Stacey Noel Connor and Nate Safer. Welcome to PCP Pop Culture.
Hello, darlings. Lee Radswell. We're diving into swans. I was trying to give you my best Lee Radswell.
I know.
I'm very convincing.
It's good. It's close. Yeah.
In person, especially, I'm really, really elegant. I have that coif of hair. It's the bouffant. No. Have you guys watched the newest feud?
Yep.
I've watched three of the four. I have not watched the most recent. No.
Yeah. I like this one. Only it had Lee being a B word. I can't say it out loud unless it's booby.
You don't like calling Lee a bitch? Come on.
Not my patron saint.
But she was a great bitch. Yeah. Like this, she was appropriately bitchy. Like it was perfect.
She posted a let's talk about the husband. When she sat down with Slim and was like, you're not going to do this with Truman. It's beneath you. It's tacky. Whatever. I know you're effing babe's husband. Let's talk about that. I was like, That's where the housewives came in. Because the tagline is the original Real Housewives. And I mean, yeah. For all how fancy they were, it was almost like they had beyond Beverly Hills and New York money, but they were just as filthy and incestuous as Vanderpump Rules.
Yeah.
It's a good, yeah.
Well, so how do you feel about the series so far being such a connoisseur?
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
Well, especially of Lee Radswell. So. Mm-hmm.
There's a few mistakes with it, the little things. The show itself is okay. I feel like it was billed as the original Real Housewives. And I feel like it's so low. It's like a slow season of Beverly Hills. It's like a lot of lunches and catching up and like, where's the big drama? You know, it's a little low stakes. And this is coming from someone who's spent years studying this to create an accurate Lee Radswell on Twitter. But I mean, it's like, I'm like, I don't know. Where's like the big, like the original feud I like better with Joan Crawford and Bette Davis so far.
Oh, yeah.
We're only halfway through this one, but it is missing something. They structured it like a Housewives season, but not the best Housewives season. I think it should have opened with the black and white ball and that famous Kyle Richards moment where she goes, like, things were so wonderful. We had so much fun that night. Little did we know how horrible things would soon become. And then flash forward. That's how you know a Housewives season is going to be. It opens with something great and then flashes. So
I think the best Ryan Murphy. I'm not a huge Ryan Murphy fan, but I think his best shows are the ones that they're all telenovelas. But the best ones are that they know they're a telenovela and they lean into it. This one is like a telenovela that thinks it's high art. So it's like, what do we do? What are we doing here? Like, I mean, Stacey, you and I have talked about it. Nip Tuck, best work he's ever done because they like two or three seasons in, they were just like, fuck it, we're going all in on this, and it was batshit crazy and it was brilliant. And there's never been a show as good as that. This one is like, I'm like, what are we doing here? I'm only three episodes in, but I'm like, what is this?
You know what I think too is an issue is that you're dealing with individually, these women are iconic, but it's too much. It's spread too thin because you have too many of them. Lee Radswell, look, I've dedicated years celebrating her. Babe Paley has her own. People worship her. And it's like spread too thin. With the first feud, it was Betty and Joan. Boom. It was just two powerhouses going at each other. This is like diluted. You don't get the best of any of them.
But I also think because I don't know. Like, I know enough about Truman Capote. Like, I've read several novels, and I know about him, and I know about Lee. Even before I knew you, I knew a bit about Lee, you know, but I didn't know very much about Babe Paley. I didn't know anything about Slim. I didn't know anything about CZ Guest. Like, so a little bit more history. I know they've tried to intertwine it, but they haven't. I don't feel like it's been done very well. Like, I still don't know exactly who these people are. I feel like I'm getting to know a little bit more about Slim, but it's also, why am I finding more out about Slim in the fourth episode? I feel like at least by the second episode, like you said, it should be kind of like a, almost like the first couple of episodes should be who all these people are and where they come from and how they kind of came together and then how everything falls apart.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we're already looking at shattered glass and trying to put it back together and see what was there before.
There was the brief. And
people don't know enough of the backstory to do it. I'm finding online people are having to research so much, which I understand, but it's not structured. They're not telling the story well.
No, I don't remember if it was the first or second episode where I think the way they did it was that Truman was explaining the swans to, maybe he was doing it to John O'Shea, maybe he was talking to somebody where he was going one by one, like, this is where Slim came from, this was, you know, this is where CZ came from. And it was sort of a backstory, but not really. It wasn't much of one. And like, like, I found myself Googling, I know the show's about Truman and these women, so it's like, I want to know more about their husbands, seems like, you know, something that a man would say. But I am curious that outside of Bill Paley, who's obviously part of the show, R.I.P. Treat Williams, the other husbands are sort of just mentioned in passing. Like CZ's husband, where there was the entire scene about the IRS seizing their property, you know, their artwork and things. I tried to go search what that was about. It's not even, it's hard to find. You go to her or her husband, William Guest, you go to their wiki pages. There's no
Winston.
I'm sorry. Winston, I knew it was an W. There's no reference at all to financial issues. So I'm like watching this like, well, what? Because they sort of reference it in the show when one of them says, oh, how could he have known that Mexico was going to nationalize its airline? So you know that it was a business gone bad, but like, why is the IRS seizing shit? And maybe they'll explain it in a later episode, but they just skimmed right past it.
They say random things. Like, it was one, which I know Lee's not the, it's Babe in this. And they could do more. I do like, they do capture that Babe Paley. This episode I thought was really poignant. And it opens with her getting dressed to the nines, hair done, jewelry, everything done in the nines. And immediately, it was just to go for chemo radiation. Literally, she was stepping out the door. And I thought that was like poetic, you know, her commitment. Mm-hmm. She's dying to putting her best foot forward and perfection. Those kind of things are good. But others, like, they're withholding. Like, look, okay, Lee's side character. We know Lee for a certain reason. And so they'll reference even a sister could steal your man.
Yeah, yeah.
But come on, they won't say Jackie by name. On this show, in this group, I use this reference a lot, this comparison. Picture this is season one Beverly Hills. Jackie would be Kathy, the off-camera sister presence that makes them all like quiver. You know what I mean? It's just, it would help viewers place these people. Because like you said, Slim, I did catch a mistake at the black and white ball one. And there are a few throughout. In this episode, when she sits down with Slim for dinner, the maitre d' calls her Mrs. Radswell. At the time, she was married to the prince, and she went by princess formally. She milked it. She was made fun of for milking it. They would say the princess of what? But she would have been. And at the black and white ball, Slim's ex-husband's new wife, the one who stole her,
Pamela.
They refer to her as Pamela Harriman, which she wouldn't go on. She wouldn't go on to marry Mr. Avril Harriman for another 5 years. That was her final husband. That was a slip up. She was married to a different guy at the time, Slim's ex-husband, Hayward. It was just like little things. She was known in the end and in history, she'll be known as Pamela Harriman. But that would be like calling 1960 Jackie O. She was Jackie Kennedy, you know.
They're clearly taking liberties with facts. Like those are weird things that weird slip ups. Like the whole thing where like the Maisel brothers did not make that documentary about the ball. Like that did not exist.
They did not.
They did make they made a short documentary with Truman that was about In Cold Blood. Like, but so I get as a narrative thing, they were like, okay, we want this standalone episode about the black and white ball, but to make it seem like that was a real thing was odd.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Maisel brothers didn't meet they met Lee later on. That's how Grey Gardens came about. But that was like an artistic liberty to give them a way to speak.
Yeah. And it was a cool way to do it. But if you were learning something about like learning about this for the first time, you might think, oh, well, can I go find that documentary? No, it's completely made up. It doesn't exist.
I even Googled it. I even was like, me? How did I not know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and also how many people, it took me watching, there's actually quite a bit of like YouTube videos now because of this. I was like, who's this Joanne? Oh, it's Joanne Carson. It's Johnny Carson's wife. Like they don't seem to, this last episode, there was a quick little reference.
She said like Johnny's over
your
there.
Your husband stuff. Yeah, but there's nothing about like, this is Johnny Carson's wife that you're going to, we'll go out to Johnny Carson's, you know, Joanne's, you know, Johnny's going to be doing this. Like it can like really go over people's heads. And also I feel like there's a lot of talking about things as opposed to showing it. And this is a medium where you show things. And that's what they always say, like, don't talk about it, show it. So, and these are visual devices. And that's the thing is that Ryan Murphy, like with American Horror Story, like with Nip Tuck, he can be really good at showing something. Mm-hmm. So why is he talking about stuff? Also, some of this dialogue just makes me want to shoot myself.
It's like, too self-aware. I don't think the women, I have to double check. The women were referred to as swans, and that was in the press. It was something Truman created. I don't think the women actually speaking amongst themselves said, we are the swans.
Yeah.
This is what us swans do.
Yeah.
No, they weren't that. What would the term be? Like self-referent? I don't know. It was a term for like Page Six back then, the gossip to say. It wasn't Paris Hilton didn't walk around saying, nice to meet you, I'm a celebutant. That's basically what a swan meant. It's a term for others to say. And so when they do that, it's a little too, I think they say on the nose.
Well, I mean, I knew from the very first frame of the very first episode, this show was going to be heavy handed when Truman's just staring at a pond of swans and then a black swan comes into the shot and you're like, oh, okay, we're just doing it. You're just gonna beat us over the head with this. This is not gonna be a subtle show. Okay.
The other thing is where they refer to their group, Slim says this, we will ice him out of high society. Socialites don't call themselves socialites, and they don't refer to their group as high society. It's too expository.
I was just gonna say, expository. They're explaining too much. The conversations they're for the viewer, they're trying to explain characters, but in ways that the two characters speaking to each other, it just sounds so forced. Like with Bill and Babe, we're talking where Babe is just like, go tell, and just starts naming off names. Go tell them to go do this. And Bill responds with, oh, you mean our grandkids? And it's like, well, yeah, you didn't need to explain it. That part didn't matter. You know, you didn't have to explain that.
Yeah. That's the thing. He's like, they're explaining the wrong things. Yeah. Like they're not explaining the things that need to be explained, that we need to know about. They're explaining the wrong. It's just so silly. Also, the title sequence, it's great. It's really cool. But it also is a complete mismatch to what this show actually is. Like, I would think that this was some type of murder mystery.
Yeah, like Psycho.
Or thriller. Yeah. Like,
it's a ripoff of Mad Men.
Yeah.
But it's not.
But Mad Men is still sexy, but not also like tawdry. It almost looks like somebody's going to get murdered here. And I'm like, that all these swans are going to get murdered. And I get it, like he's supposed to be killed in high society or something. But again, heavy-handed. Yeah. And it doesn't match what this show is about. I expected something a little bit more elegant or to like
Gilded Age. You know, they have a beautiful opening.
Yeah, I mean, they still could have done, I like the style. It could have been still stylistically similar. It's just, I envision, but something that's a little bit more, my brain's not working, but you get what I mean. It's not a thriller, just something that's a little bit more like societal, about a fall from society, not a fall lifelike or something.
Yeah. Oh, I do have a couple of fun facts about this. This tweet went viral. I'm very proud. On Lee, the connection between Housewives of New York and the Swans. So the two main hitters here, we all know, Babe Paley, Lee, New York, Princess Carol, Roudswell, and Tinsley. So I did some digging and it's really intertwined. And I'm actually impressed by the old New York cast now that I realize, of course, I knew Carol, but I did some digging because obviously Carol is Lee's daughter-in-law, directly married into descended in the line of the Swans. Tinsley, however, our sweet socialite princess, Tinsley Mortimer, as in Babe Cushing Mortimer Paley. At one point, two ships passing through the night, passing through the social register, Babe by marriage was Tinsley's aunt by marriage. So Tinsley's ex-husband was Topper Mortimer, nephew of Stanley Mortimer. Had Babe been alive, she would have been at Tinsley's wedding. So there's
Stanley Mortimer was Babe's first husband, correct?
Yes. Yep. Correct. And then I believe she had kids with him. She didn't have all her kids with Paley, if I remember correct, with Paley.
Right.
But the other thing is, of course, digging a little deeper, this is a fun fact for you guys, the money that's intertwined there. So the Mortimers, as in Tinsley Mortimer, the Mortimer family, they made their money as partners, founding partners in Standard Oil with the Rockefellers. Lee's stepfather was an Auchincloss, and just like the Mortimers, they were all partners. They made their money in Standard Oil with the Rockefellers too. So they all come, their fortunes came from the same company. And Lee ended up inheriting a small chunk of the Auchincloss fortune because Jackie had so much and their half siblings were born Auchinclosses. They had their own trust. So their mother looked at Lee, who was very expensive to maintain, not great with money, in between husbands to fund her. She took her widow's share of the Auchincloss money, which is also the Mortimer money, and she put it in a trust for Lee to sustain her. So she wouldn't have to continue scamming husbands to keep her penthouse. So, I mean, that's like financially incestuous. These groups like go way back generations. So that was my fun fact for the week.
I love it.
I love names. I love money. I love inheritance. So yay. Maybe we should flash forward to the current times. So it seemed to live a lot in the past. Anything fun happening this week?
Let me tell you.
Younger?
I took a hero's journey this weekend. It was just on my own doing. I wasn't even prompted. I just decided. Mm-hmm. I had an hour-long car ride yesterday. I'm like, fuck it. J-Lo's new album. This is me. .. now was released. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to listen to it. Listen to it. I have not listened to an album straight in one sitting. Actually, I was going to say in a long time, but I listened to Beyonce's Renaissance in one sitting. Completely different albums, because Beyonce's Renaissance, you have to sit in one sitting because it's one song. It's like one continuous song. J-Lo's, not that. But I still sat in it and took notes while I was driving. I was making notes to myself. And let me tell you guys, let me start off by saying that Ayo Adebiri, the thing that she got shit for what she said 4 years ago about J-Lo on a podcast, she was 100% right. 100% right about J-Lo's career and talent being a scam. And I listened to this album, and all I thought was, I don't know if you saw, there were reports backstage at the SNL a few weeks ago that Ayo went into J-Lo's dressing room and had this heartfelt apology and just threw it out there and just said, I'm so sorry, and just, you know, cried and everything. I think she should not have done that. I think she should have doubled down and told J-Lo to her face, you suck, because that's what I got from this album. So just, okay, I'll just go through some of the notes. The album has mostly bops. It's mostly bops. No bangers, which is sad, because the only J-Lo songs I've ever liked are the bangers, you know, the Jenny from the Blocks, those type of songs. Mm-hmm. Couple songs that attempt. She tried her hand at a couple ballads. I don't know if Stacey, did you end up just listening to the first part?
Well, I had seen it on SNL.
Oh, yeah, you saw, right. Okay.
So I did. I saw it on SNL. So not only did I hear that song, but I saw that visual that was so uncomfortable in so many ways, but then hearing that song, which I listened to, I think the first maybe minute of, but it took 30 seconds for her to even start singing. So you know that there's an issue. Unless it's a Celine Dion song, you know there's an issue for there to be 30 seconds of a song to be wasted without singing.
It's a bold choice. It's a bold choice for anybody to have track one be a ballad. Because you want to get them in. Get them in the door. Don't just throw, unless you're Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
Probably a few others.
Yeah, vocals. Yeah, ballads require a vocal talent that J-Lo isn't known
talent.
For.
Yeah, no, this
talent, just vocal talent.
Yeah, anybody who listens to this and is like, okay, I might give it a try. Start with track one. The song is "This Is Me Now." It blew my mind as soon as she starts singing off key, and I'm just like, I was texting you. I'm like, that I'm 10 seconds in this song, and she's off key. Okay, it's one thing, like, I don't know if you talked about last week, but Alicia Keys, you know, she fucked up a note on the halftime show. She got a lot of shit for it, but it was live. Why? She was off key live, and they fixed it.
She's Alicia Keys.
She's Alicia Keys. They fixed it up in post, and they got some shit for that because the official thing got put up onto YouTube, and they fixed it. But she's doing it live. J-Lo is doing it in a recording studio, which tells me that the take that they took for the album, this off-key shit, was the best take they got. So I don't know what any. So yes, so she's doing this off-key ballad, and I'm like, oh god, we're starting like this. And then the songs don't get better. In fact, more than anything, the songs are all the same. They all sound 16 tracks. All sound 16? The same. Okay, there's a slight twinge to that. There are 13 songs because two of them have, one song has three versions, one song has two versions. So those five are actually just two songs. Those are what I assume to be the singles for the album. The it's so, okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. So like I said, I will say this, she raps on most of the songs because she cannot sing. So it's a lot of her rapping.
Can she rap?
She's okay.
Like Jenny from the Block.
Yeah.
Better than she can sing?
She's okay. And then, she has, She has one song on it, like that. She does do a nice reference to Rocks That I Got, Jenny from the Block. Like that was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. The song's called Hearts and Flowers. There's another song that Ben Affleck is credited on. His voice is credited on the song where he says, "I love you, I always have," is in the back, like in the background of the song and at the end, but you can't really make out that it's him. It just is like grumbled men's voice. But I guess that was him. I don't know. I will say that there are some moments. Again, this is just me going straight through the album, sitting in the car. I'll get to the next bullshit, which actually just throws everything on its head. So Keys can't really sing. The two singles that I assuming are going to be the singles for radio release, she's multiple versions of each. One is called Rebound and one is called, what was the other one? Rebound and Can't Get Enough. I believe Can't Get Enough was the other song she did on SNL, with that features Lotto.
Yes.
That's that one.
Oh, I heard that on the radio last night.
So that,
and I wasn't sure like if it's new or old. I was just like, this is J-Lo. It's Kiss FM. Like, late at night, that's when they play the hits, so maybe this is a new one.
Well, the Can't Get Enough is that's the one. There's three versions on this album. There's Can't Get Enough, just that regular song. Then there's Can't Get Enough featuring Lotto, which probably is the one mm-hmm. she did on SNL. Then there's a third Can't Get Enough that is a Bruno Bruno Martini remix, trying to turn mm-hmm. it into a club banger. None of those are very good. Mm-hmm. And then she has another song, Rebound, where she does the same thing, where she releases Rebound, and then she releases Rebound with rap features. And there's no mm-hmm. reason those shouldn't have been the same song. But yeah, so I will say this. There is one song I kind of like on it, and it's a song called Dear Ben, Part 2. There's a Dear Ben Part 1 higher up on the album. Didn't care for it. Dear Ben Part 2, I liked it. Kind of liked it. So
tell me why.
Tell you why? It was sweet. Yeah. Honestly, the whole thing's about Ben. Like, they cannot mention him more throughout the albums, throughout the tracks.
Is it about like Dunkin' Donuts and Marlboros?
It's about lost. Like it's about lost love. Well, okay. This is where it gets into the movie that actually makes it better to explain. So me just listening to these tracks while I'm in my car, I'm not getting I'm hearing the lyrics. I'm hearing the songs. I'm just being like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. But when I get home and I watch the musical portion, it sort of comes together. So, but I will end my part of this album review by saying that my final takeaway from the album and all that shit is that at least it was only 54 minutes long. That was my grand review of this album. Then I just took it on my own to go dive right into the movie that she made for Amazon Prime that is called This Is Me Now, A Love Story, and it's an hour plus long movie they're calling it like a visualization of the album. Think like what Beyonce did with Lemonade, kind of that mm-hmm. world where it's not a concert film, it's these visualizations of it's not a series of music videos. It's this long, like, narrative arc. It's telling a story that the songs from the albums are kind of put in for, song and dance numbers, but there's dialogue, there's comedy, there's all kinds of things. They're just breaking into musical scenes that are from songs from the albums. If that makes any sense.
But not good.
No, correct? No, these are the same shitty songs for that. Yes, from before. And it's it, yeah. So it's it the New York Times, their review of it, the early review of This Is Me Now, a love story. They describe it as an autobiographical musical rom-com action sci-fi. That's how they describe it as in general. An autobiographical musical rom-com action sci-fi. That is the LA Times just trying to describe this movie. And it essentially is the entire aesthetic of this movie was Moulin Rouge. Like they're going for like a Moulin Rouge, Baz Luhrmann fever dream thing going on, where it's a lot of effects. It's a lot of like crazy effects, dancing scenes, telling the story through dance. It also gets off to a very ham-handed beginning because it starts with Ben and J-Lo riding a motorcycle through the salt, like it looks like the Utah Salt Flats. And they're like just roaring down the road in a motorcycle, and the motorcycle crashes, and they all fall off the bikes. And then that was like the end of that relationship. And then, so the rest of the movie is her trying to pick her life up and go through all these different, you know, these different exes. She went through abusive exes. She got married 3 times, and all these marriages and all these things are all dance numbers, but they all relate to the songs that are being used in these movies. Like they make more sense when you see in the visual form than if you're just listening to them in the album. So stuff started to make a little bit, I might not be making any sense. My brain is just going a minute.
I don't think the movie makes any sense. No. I think I sent this to you what I read about it, because I thought it was a documentary, like kind of like her, like the whole like Super Bowl thing that she did a couple of years ago. I was like, why do we need another one? So I didn't realize it was a scripted type of thing. But the review from the Washington Post was that the headline for that is J-Lo's new album film is the perfect love letter ... to J-Lo. And then it says, and they say, This Is Me Now may not win a Grammy or an Oscar, but it will certainly take home the trophy for the most J-Lo thing J-Lo has ever done.
Yeah. No.
Is this like her trying to get artsy, like renaissance? Like, is she trying to do like her own renaissance?
Well, it was, she's, like, we were under the impression that when this was first announced that this was going to be a documentary concert film, just like Travis, just like Taylor did with the Eras Tour, like Beyonce did with Renaissance. But we were very much confused when one of her, so this thing has quite an impressive cast, to be honest. Cast of characters, they're playing different parts through this narrative thing. When the characters aren't singing and dancing, some of the cast members are Fat Joe plays her psychiatrist. Then Ben himself.
That's nothing against Fat Joe. That's just about Fat Joe playing a psychiatrist.
I saw a picture of him. He's not so fat anymore.
No, he looks good.
Joe. No.
He looks good. Then Ben himself. So Ben plays two roles. His first role is the biker. He's the man who she's riding the motorcycle down the salt flats, and they look all love, and then they crash the motorcycle. He's only referred to as the driver because you never see his face. But then throughout the rest of the movie, Ben plays like in heavy makeup. He plays a cable news person that's always up like on a TV up top, and he plays like some crazy like Fox News talking head, like a Bill O'Reilly type or a Hannity or something like that. It's just some annoying, it's clearly just Ben in all kinds of makeup. And then there's the bulk of the cast is they have this,
Zodiacal Council.
Yes, that was the word I was trying to look for. The Zodiacal zodiacal council who's looking over J-Lo and wanting her to get her shit straight. And the people in the zodiacal council, is that okay?
Yeah.
Like those people are played by Jane Fonda, Trevor Noah, Sofia Vergova, Post Malone, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Vergara.
What did I say?
Vergoa?
Did I say Vergoa? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay. Are you sure you didn't hear me say Noah? I said Trevor.
I wasn't sure if that was.
I said Trevor Noah.
I wasn't sure if that was. No, no, you said. You said like Sofia Vergova.
Did I say that?
And I thought maybe that's like some Russian tennis star I haven't heard of. So I was just going with it.
Flip that one back. Sofia
Vergara.
God damn it. Vergarva, Post Malone, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Kiki Palmer. Who else was in there? Oh, Kim Petras. So they got some names for this council. And all of those actors I named were different signs for the council. I don't remember. They were each a sign. The only one I remembered is that Post Malone was Leo. Cause why would I care about anybody but a Leo?
Well, and according to the Washington Post article, they were all playing their sun signs. So whatever sign they were representing, that is their sun sign, sun astrological sign. So Sofia Vergara is Pisces, so she's a Pisces sun. Post Malone is a Leo. So yeah,
gotcha.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
So it's strange. It tells a story that just, like I said, there's dialogue. But
does it tell a story?
I was going to say a story that did the story need to be told?
No, it's not a story. It's not a story that needed to be told. It is a story where we knew where this was starting. We knew where it was ending. She was riding on this bike with Ben Affleck. It was clearly Ben Affleck. The bike crashed. Her life took a turn. Then she started dating these horrible rebound men who abused her. Then she started just marrying random men. Like she had this group of friends who would just try to advise her that weren't the gods, the council. Like these are friends on earth that would try to be like, hey, you need to be alone for once. You're addicted to love. You stop, stop always being married. Stop always being with somebody. But they were just going through about how she'd go get married after married after married. She got married three different times, and each marriage has these huge dance numbers where they're performing music from the weddings, but they're all weddings that end up going to be divorced. It was weird that they had three of them when in reality, J-Lo only had two. I don't know who those necessarily applied to. Like the only two people between Ben and Ben again were Chris Judd and Mark Anthony. So,
well, maybe A-Rod counts. They were so close.
Oh, maybe. Okay, that's. Well,
she was married. Planning.
She was married before.
She was married to Ahani Noah.
That was before.
But maybe she's.
This sounds like the Wiz.
She's taking a lot of liberties.
This sounds like the Wiz to me.
It's.
Yeah, this sounds not the Wizard of Oz, but the Wiz. I'm just like, there are dance numbers. She's on the journey.
Please don't denigrate the Wiz like that. Please don't.
I'll probably never see this movie. I don't know. I am like trying to. Well, actually, I'm really tempted now because I can't wrap my head around it.
I'm doing a terrible job of describing it, but it is. Yeah. It's like I said, it's a Baz Luhrmann fever dream. It is like, what the fuck is happening here? But the production design is top notch. Like this thing.
Well, she self-funded it, so I would certainly hope so.
Yeah, the reports were that she spent $20 million on it. $20 million of her own dollars that Amazon then picked up. But so this is definitely much of a passion project for her. But like the designs, the effects, the dance numbers, I thought it was very funny. I showed you guys the article that one of the characters in this who plays one of her friends that tries to get her to get her life back together, came out and said that she thinks J-Lo is going to get Academy Award nomination type, you know, that's the kind of review she's going to get, or like she might get nominated for an Oscar. I would love to speak to somebody who works for Ampus to ask them, what in the fuck would this be nominated for? Nobody knows what this is. It's insane. I don't know. There's a happy ending, I guess, where the motorcycle guy comes back. There's just a lot of crazy dancing. Some of the songs, when you get the visual put to them, they sound like the lyrics make a little bit more sense than when you're just listening to them. But this is still just the note that I wrote that was my main takeaway from the movie, where I said my main takeaway from the album was that at least it's only 54 minutes. My main takeaway for the movie is at least it's only an hour 10 and it looked really expensive. So that was my high point I was taking from that. and it's just, I just feel like I died inside a little bit.
And didn't go.
I'm sure that's exactly what she was looking for when she made this. I want people to die so much when they watch it.
So much ballads and like I said, the one song
my one important question here is Ben, does Ben dance?
Okay.
Is he in like, is this like
no,
some like,
no, okay.
Some like old school.
Well, the whole basis of this is it's a Puerto Rican like fairy tale. I'm going to butcher the names of the man. It's like some version of a Romeo and Juliet, but it's a Puerto Rican fairy tale where the lost loves, one turns into a hummingbird, one turns into a rose, and they have to find each other. So this whole movie is full of rose and hummingbird imagery. So that like keeps the narrative going, and it's just a lot, and the singing is bad, the acting, the comedic, the zodiac, okay, I'm not gonna be able to say that word, the zodiacal,
that's okay,
zodiacal council, like I said, Trevor Noah, Jane Fonda, they're supposed to be the comic relief, but it's not really funny. I don't know. I wish I could explain it better than I am, because I just don't understand it. And now this,
it sounds like no one can explain it. Not even J-Lo.
No. And the one takeaway though, that I found the funniest, and if you want to lose your mind, it's an hour on Amazon Prime. Just if you have an hour of your life that you can just get rid of, give it a try. But my favorite thing about it is that at the premiere party last week for this film/album, when J-Lo and Ben got into a fight at the premiere, which I think is far more dramatic and exciting than anything that happened during this monstrosity. I don't know if you saw that at the premiere to this movie. Video was caught of Ben and Jennifer Lopez having a quote unquote spirited argument or spirited conversation. And they were fighting at the premiere of her own party, which is kind of on brand for them now. So that was exciting. I've fallen so far down.
I think it would just be better if they just did a reality show, you know, like Nick Lachey and Jessica Simpson, like newlyweds. Yeah. And so that will just tank the relationship faster. Let's just do that.
Well, they also, now they have
that's where we could step in and help.
Yeah.
I would, yeah, capture the... We need Andy and a camera.
She
get Alex Baskin on the phone.
Yeah. Get Alex Baskin.
She just can't. She can't act. There's a scene where she's supposed to play drunk, and She can't even act she's, drunk. She can't do drunk.
She's never been drunk in her
she's
life.
She's doing like so, she's I mean, doing the old real, vaudeville never... like stomp around drunk thing, and it's like Yeah, it's
well,
it's
you know what I'm thinking. If you guys want to help us get off the block and get us some rocks that we'd like to got, I don't know. I'm trying to make this rhyme in real time. The best way to help us out is off the six train is to rate, subscribe, review. Rate, review, subscribe, and follow Pretty Corrupt Podcast. You can hit us up on Instagram and TikTok at Pretty Corrupt Podcast. Also on Twitter at Pretty Corrupt One. Also, please, please, please make sure to share Pretty Corrupt Podcast with this might brighten the day for anyone you know who's fallen victim to actually watching J-Lo's movie. This might help them through the therapy and the PTSD and confusion of whatever they just experienced. Would
everything that you just heard me record was some varying level of PTSD.
show us on the doll like, where J-Lo made you watch. Like there was,
did I get to the part where Ben is actually credited in one of the songs?
Yeah.
Okay, I did get to there. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, where you can't. Yeah. It's a lot.
She's got you in a fever dream now. You're repeating thing, yourself. Thing, you're, you, she's messed
this thing
you
was
up.
A fever dream, and it got you know it got me there, this story of her life and about how she was addicted to love and always had to find love and didn't actually find Ben again until she decided she could be alone. That was her whole thing. And then when she decided she could be when she decided she could be alone is when she found Ben again. So that was the moral of the story.
Well, you never have to be alone when you're listening to PCP. So
I don't know what this is going to sound back on Listen Back because I am over here just straight up doing the Pepe Sylvia. Like I'm ready to get shit up on the walls, like with the yarn in between because I've lost my mind.
Well, Jordan's going to lose his if he doesn't get a cigarette soon.
on that note, nighty night. Cause no one can do it like we do it, like we do it, like we do it. Cause no one can do it like we do it, like we do it, like we do it.